Hey, it's Lisa Carlin from Attacking Third to tell you about the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe. It's equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend. The Hyundai Santa Fe features available all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, plus available dual wireless charging pads, ensuring that you can take on any adventure. It's ski season, and with the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe, I can easily load the car with all my gear plus my friends in the third row and make it right to the base of the slopes with all-wheel drive. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Attacking Third, a CBS Sports soccer podcast. I'm Sandra Herrera, lead NWSL writer for CBS Sports. Joined today, as always, by my colleague and co-host Lisa Roman, NWSL analyst and broadcaster. On today's episode, we're going to be discussing the United States Women's National Team roster announced for the pair of Australia friendlies coming up in November. We're going to chat a little bit about San Diego FC with their new name as Wave Football Club, CBS Sports and Paramount Plus partnership with Barclays FA Women's Super League, and the return of our mailbag segment. But before we get into all that, a quick reminder to follow us on Twitter at Attacking Third. You can also head on over to our YouTube page and hit subscribe so that you never miss a new video, interview, or whenever we go live. Plus, you can catch great extended highlights of NWSL matches and more. Head on over to youtube.com/attackingthird. I'm excited for this episode, Lisa. We got a lot of different things to get into. How are you today?
I'm good. You're right. There's so much meat in today's episode. Lots of meat, lots of potatoes. I'm pumped to get into it because I'm starving for all of this news. Sandra, how are you in this beautiful fall week we have?
I'm excited. I'm in good spirits. I'm in good energy. You know, in between all of this, it's still NWSL playoffs. There's like a week up to the semifinals that are going to be taking place. And we've got so much content for all of our listeners and the audience out there who are keeping up to date with all of the playoff action. But today is going to be centering in on some national team news and some other fun things that we have going on over at CBS Sports and Paramount Plus. So let's get into it. First, a playoff plug, because that is what we are keeping our energy with right now. And the playoffs will continue with the semifinals on Sunday, November the 14th. It will be OL Reign versus Washington Spirit, number 2 taking on number 3 at 3 p.m. Eastern. Portland Thorns FC taking on Chicago Red Stars. It'll be number 1 versus the number 4 seed. All of these matches can be viewed on CBS Sports Network, and that the winner of these two semifinals will go on into the championship, which will be on November 20th at Lynn Family Stadium in Louisville, Kentucky at 12 noon Eastern time on CBS. So get your tickets at nwslsoccer.com/championship. Lisa, something that's happening right after that NWSL championship, and we heard about it because there was some press conference with Vlatko Andonovski upon the announcement of this United States Women's National Team roster. These games are going to be taking place right after that. So whoever is involved in these national team camps will be heading out right after the championship concludes. But at the end of November in Australia, the United States Women's National Team is going to be participating in two friendlies. It'll be taking place on November the 26th at 11 p.m. Eastern time, and then on November 30th at 8:05 local time, 4:05 a.m. Eastern time. So huge gap in times. It's definitely like, oh yes, these games are being played in Australia when you just look at those times specifically. So it's like one is going to be 11 p.m., the other one's going to be 4 a.m. It's a ride for sure. Let's take a look at this United States Women's National Team roster, because I'm really excited for us to sort of react to it. I know we were excited when we saw the names dropping here. For goalkeepers, we've got Bella Bixby, Jane Campbell, Casey Murphy. The defending core is Alana Cook, Abby Dahlkemper, Turner Davidson, Emily Fox, Sophia Huerta, Becky Sauerbrunn, Emily Sonnet. Midfielders are Lindsay Horan, Rose Lavelle, Katarina Macario, Christy Mewis, Ashley Sanchez, and Andy Sullivan. And the forward core is Bethany Balser, Ashley Hatch, Margaret Purse, Sophia Smith, Lynn Williams, and Morgan Weaver. It is a bit of rotation, which is putting it nicely, Lisa. We're talking about coming off of these September and October windows, which really featured a Tokyo Olympic heavy roster, right? For those two games, sort of post celebration tour of the bronze medal, the farewell matches for Carly Lloyd and upon her retirement. And now here we are. These matches were essentially up in the air, Lisa. They were a little bit undetermined because they were going to be matches taking place in Australia. But then all of a sudden, all the protocols got put into place and the roster got announced. What were some of your reactions when you were taking a look at these names?
So many new names. I know you just ran through that list, but I was very pleasantly surprised to see the names on this roster. Clearly, Vlatko Andonovski is looking ahead to the future. And clearly, he's paying attention to the NWSL and this regular season, which we always knew he was. As a former NWSL coach, he's keyed in on what the league means, what it stands for, how competitive it is, what it means to be successful in this league, and how to grow from May until November in this league, and how it is to get better. So 21 of the 22 players listed on this ROTCO for Vlatko Andonovski are playing in the NWSL. Kat Macario is the only exception, and we know she plays for Lyon in France, and she's having a fantastic season herself over there. But of those 21 players playing in the NWSL, 17 of those players made the NWSL playoffs. So not only are the players good, and he's not just looking at the teams that are in the semifinals or making the postseason for the NWSL, but he's looking at the roster overall and the league overall. We know that because Emily Fox got called into during the October games as well, a defender for Racing Louisville, who has had a fantastic season, and Racing Louisville was one of the first two teams out of the playoff race for the NWSL playoffs and postseason. The fun thing about this roster is there are only 10 players still remaining that played in the Tokyo Olympics this past summer. And so many fans and critics, I'm going to say, of this roster during the Olympics said how old players were, how they needed fresh young blood. Well, there is nothing to complain about now. 5 players are uncapped. 12 of the players have 10 or less caps with the U.S. Women's National Team. Becky Sauerbrunn is the oldest player on this squad at 36, and there are 21 other players that are 30 or younger, Christy Mewis being one of those other, quote, older ones who sits at age 30 on this roster. So those are the things that I'm personally keyed in on. Under 25, there are 10 players that are under the age of 25. So the average age of this team is 25.6 heading into these Australia matches. That's a very, very, very young team when the average age was over 30 something for the Tokyo Olympics this summer. For you, Sandra, when you read some of these names and when you look at how many new names there are and how young they are, what do you think Vlatko Andonovski is thinking about when he picks these players, hand picks them to compete against Australia?
Well, first of all, you know, it excites me. I was excited to see when the roster dropped and to see so many different players involved in this camp and in this particular experience. Like, this team doesn't often, get overseas, but they do perhaps more than any other national team, if that makes sense. So we saw them go overseas to have in an April window to have a European fixtures against Sweden and against France. And now we're seeing them close out this year going to Australia, but we're not seeing this in a sort of what does it mean for the next tournament type of scenario. Because the reality is that the next international tournament that's going to be taking place is going to be in 2023. It's going to be the 2023 World Cup. And there wasn't a lot of time for somebody like Vlatko Andonovski to sort of get in there and say, hey, I'm going to mix things up because Olympics, no, they pretty much stuck for the most part with players who were familiar with each other, players who had played in that 2019 World Cup. And there's a real opportunity here. I think we initially assumed that any type of preparation for 2023 was probably going to come within that January camp. Mm-hmm. And it just sort of feels like it's coming sooner. And I love that. I love to still be surprised by a team like this, because this is, let's be frank, this is a program that has been at the top, right, for so many years, has been competitive for so many decades, has won multiple World Cups, has qualified and participated in multiple World Cups, has always been a feature there. And the same could be said for Olympic Games as well. So to be able to sort of get a roster and find yourself pleasantly surprised, I think is kind of nice, honestly. I think there's always that, there was that assumption because those January camps typically happen in just before like the She Believes Cup. And, you know, they tend to be pretty large, you know, versus like a 20 to 25 player camp. You've got like a 30 to 35 player camp with a lot of other names and a lot of other players who are perhaps either getting invites back in or new looks. But that's not the case with this particular roster. So another thing that I'm really excited about is that Adanovsky is absolutely viewing it as that. He's viewing it as an opportunity. And he's somebody who very clearly wants to get sort of this new era look, this new era wave on in his program under his tenure as head coach. But you a really good test to sort of see who is going to be able to handle pressure, high pressure situations or high level situations are games like this. When you're going overseas, when you are playing in front of not what is considered a home crowd, right? So these players who are primarily NWSL players who don't have a lot of caps under their belt, who maybe have had some experience with the national team, but not a ton. Even if you're looking at players like Alana Cook, you know, who only has two caps, you know, under her belt, you know, somebody like Ashley Sanchez, who's getting in there for the first time, but has a lot of experience at the youth national team levels, right? Or even somebody like a Margaret Purse, who only has seven caps under her belt as well, right? So these are players who are going to be getting this opportunity to either A, show why they should still be considered as part of the fold, or B, sort of introduce themselves as new players who should be considered overall. And also the fact that there are some players on this roster that have zero caps, right? Zero goals to their names. It's impressive. It's exciting.
It is so exciting to see that the future honestly is here. And I'm really glad we don't have to wait until that January camp for Vlatko to kind of get a look inside his brain at who he's been watching. I want to dive into these categories a little bit with you, Sandra, and pick your brain on them, because goalkeeper position, it's Jane Campbell is the only one that's really been there before. It's Bella Bigsby with the Portland Thorns and Casey Murphy with North Carolina Courage, which we've talked about these players specifically most recently, Casey Murphy with the Courage and how well she's done. 13 shutouts on the season for North Carolina, which is huge. She broke her single season record hitting that landmark and everything. But the fun fact about these two players, what is it that it's the first time the U.S. women's national team has had two goalkeepers on the same roster that are over 6 feet?
6 feet, yeah.
Like, that's such a fun fact. I love that. I love that U.S. Soccer Federation puts out some of these crazy fun facts. But I think that's a position that to have a lot of depth and growth at this level is huge to see. So Jane Campbell still there in that line. What else for you really stood out when you looked line by line, defenders, goalkeepers, midfield forwards at this roster? I just started with the goalkeepers because they're at the top of my list. But for you, what stood out?
Yeah, no, similarly, I was hyped to see Bigsby and Murphy get those call into camps. I mean, Murphy, what she did this season was unbelievable. We just witnessed that quarterfinal. It was an unbelievable performance that she put out there for North Carolina. And also, like, maybe a little unsurprising, honestly, you know, Vlatko Adanovsky, he coached her for a little bit when he was with the Reign. So he has familiarity with this player and who she is and what she can bring, and has very clearly noticed her continued development, right? And he alluded to that fact in his press conference that is why she is part of this this core roster. But I think the most, one of the other things that sort of stood out to me was the fact that when this forward core was announced, Margaret Purse was a part of that forward core. She was not listed as a defender, not as, you know, what people would have assumed was going to be a fullback. And honestly, that was delightful to see that for me. I know you and I have come on this podcast and we are both fans of watching Purse in that forward position. She was very clearly such an integral part of that attack for New Jersey, New York, Gotham FC during their season, which ended with that loss in the quarterfinal. But she was doing it for them higher up the field, even though there was some moments at her arrival to Gotham FC where she was being utilized on the back line, mm-hmm. utilized as an outside back under Freya Kuhn at the time, and then eventually pushed higher a little bit. But once she made her return from injury, in September with this Gotham team, they just looked like a completely different team with her on the pitch, higher up the field, involved in the attack. And so I am very excited to see what she could possibly bring. What kind of looks are they going to use? And that was something that, you know, I asked Vlad Gondanovsky in the press conference, you know, along with sort of maybe, you know, talking a little bit about the names that aren't there, is like, in bringing in so many new players, is there a possibility that we are going to potentially see some different things tactically? And he didn't necessarily say that like 100% yes, that they will be rolling out an entire new system, but that he absolutely wants to see some different tactical looks based on some of the personnel that he has invited into these camps. So I am excited to see all of that as well.
I am too. I mean, I don't think that he was ever going to tell you, yes, this is my formation. I'm going to try. This is it. I wanted that to happen in the press conference. I wanted him to be like, you know what, Sandra, this is what's going to happen. Of course. No, we got to keep some cards close to the chest.
We got to wait and see.
We do. I also think that when you look at the roster a little bit in the midfield, Ashley Sanchez is really the only quote unquote new player that's joining that midfield unit. A lot of names stay still there with Lindsay Horan, Rose Lavelle, Kat Macario, Christy Mewis, Andy Sullivan, who has done tremendous and a fantastic job. Interesting though, adding Ashley Sanchez into that mix, a really young player that I think can add so much to that midfield. It just a different look. That's it. That's all we're asking for, a little spice to shake things up. But yep. Ashley Sanchez, a player that's what, 22 or so, another really, really young member of the squad. And in the forwards, I mean, Sophia Smith, Morgan Weaver, Bethany Balser, they're all really young players that have proven that they can play and compete at a very high level with OL Reign, Portland Thorns. They're just doing really a tremendous job, Washington Spirit, even with Ashley Hatch in there, who maybe not one of the youngest in that group, but she's still a younger player when you look at how the roster has traditionally been laid out. Sandra, I think it would be doing a disservice to any of our listeners if we didn't just kind of highlight, circle some of the players that aren't listed on this roster. Kristen Press has opted out again. She and Crystal Dunn opted out in October camp. So Crystal Dunn is not on this roster. Kristen Press. There's no Tobin Heath again, who continues to play overseas. No Megan Rapinoe, no Alex Morgan, no Carly Lloyd, of course, because of that. A few others there as well. Kelly O'Hara, who is not on this list. Mallory Pugh, Trinity Rodman. We have maybe some insight on those players and everything, but it's really a young new look. And it's not to say that those players that are not on this roster won't be there in the future. It's just something different that Vlad Gondanovsky is trying.
Yeah, I like it, honestly. I think it's going to be a real test and opportunity for these type of players to sort of get in there. It's one thing to sort of get into, I think, a January camp and you're surrounded by a ton of people and maybe there's not the same expectation as preparing for like an actual match, a pair of friendlies like this, but that's not the case in this one. Like they're going overseas to another country. They're going to be playing on a field that is not their home turf, right? There's all of those scenarios that come into play. So I'm excited for that angle. But it also makes sense in that the players that are not a part of it, there's a couple, like you, the players that you've mentioned already who have already sort of previously said in the past that they are like going to put a pause on the rest of this season, especially in games like this that aren't necessarily in preparation for anything in particular, and sort of obviously preparing for either a playoff, right? Megan Rapinoe, one of the older players who's got a playoff to sort of prepare for, you know, and Crystal Dunn sort of also alluding to the past about, you know, wanting to put a pause on things and having to go back and forth is too much. And Kristen Press with wanting to step away from the actual camps, you know, just to sort of put a pause and give herself some time to focus on her mental health. Now, when you're looking at the young players who aren't a part of this, you know, we had somebody like Amel Pugh, who was a part of both of those camps in September and in October, alongside Andy Sullivan, alongside Sophia Smith, players who got brought in by Vlatko and Danowski because there were still injuries that they were navigating, and also because of their really successful NWSL play. And we're not going to be seeing them. Well, we're not going to be seeing Mal Pugh specifically in this window of time because she is one of those players who opted out. Vlatko and Danowski also made mention that Trinity Rodman was a player that received an invitation to the camp for Australia's friendlies as well. And she was another player who opted out at this time. There wasn't actually any specific reasoning for that, where somebody like Kelly O'Hara, who was invited to these camps, opted out due to family obligations. People are going to try to connect dots or try to perhaps assume themes, and that is their prerogative and their right. But there was nothing else really said about that in the press conference at all. And if anything, Vlatko and Danowski alluded to those January camps as an opportunity for those same players to get back into the mix and get back into training environments with the senior at the senior level.
Yeah, so big things to come, of course, with Australia and competing against that competition and having these players in ahead of the January camp and ahead of what then is usually the She Believes Cup, but getting these players time and competition against a really good competition in Australia and the hosts of the FIFA Women's World Cup in 2023. So there's a lot of moving parts and a lot of really good options that are to come in having the U.S. team head all the way to Australia down under to play these games. One of the negatives, East Coast time zone over here, this 4 a.m. start time, this 11 p.m. match start time, that's a little rough on me. It's giving me like summer Tokyo Olympics flashbacks. We need all the hydration and the caffeination this November.
I had the same exact thought. And my brain went to the same exact place. I was like, oh my gosh, this feels like the Olympics, yeah, like all over again. We'll see. I think we'll see how we both feel. I know for this round, I know people have typically looked to us as sort of live post-game reactions. I do not believe that that's something that we're going to be providing for this round of friendlies, but they are two matches that we will be watching and paying attention to and recapping for people when they do happen. But I'm excited for it. And I love that it's Australia, like you said, Lisa. You know, this is where the World Cup is going to be. You know, it's going to be hosted in 2023 by Australia, by New Zealand. So maybe this is just a little bit of a taste of what could possibly be required of the United States national team in terms of A, preparing for this type of trip, you know, and B, participating in games in that country. You know, this is a country that has very strict COVID policies and procedures in place. They are one of the nations that require vaccination status in terms of traveling to the country. And I'm sure because of that, that was something that had to be discussed or planned adequately for ahead of these friendlies. And I'm sure that that is something that has to stay on their radar as they continue to prepare specifically for Australia, New Zealand in 2023, because there's no way of really knowing if that policy will change in the next, let's just say, 18 months. So it's definitely something to keep an eye on, and we will be doing it here at Attacking Third. So in the meantime, a fun stat I think to close out this segment for is looking back at this roster, just sort of maybe going through really quickly, and I'm going to do this before we head to break. So many of these players and their camps, there's so many players that have 10 or less caps with this national team on this roster. So that includes Bella Bixby and Casey Murphy as a goalkeepers with 0, Jane Campbell with 7, right, caps for the defenders. Alana Cook only with 2 caps. There is Emily Fox only with 6 caps. There's Sofia Huerta with 7 caps. And then for the midfielders, Ashley Sanchez with 0. It's going to be Katarina McCarry, I'll include her because she's got 12 under her belt. And then for the forwards, Bethany Balser, her first time in these senior level camps with 0 caps right now. Ashley Hatch only with 2. Margaret Purse, even herself, even though she's been very, very impressive in camps at times, with 7 caps. And then it's Sophia Smith with 10 caps and Morgan Weaver with 0 as well. So it's an exciting time. It's an exciting roster to take a look at. And I will be 0% shocked if there are people, American audiences, waking up super early or staying up super late to take a look at a couple of these games. And we'll be excited and following along as well. We are going to take a quick break and we will be back with some couple of news segments and the return of our mailbag segment after this quick break.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
News for CBS Sports and Paramount Plus. They have engaged in a multi-year deal with Barclays FA Women's Super League. CBS Sports is going to become the exclusive U.S. English language rights holder of the Barclays FA Women's Super League, one of Europe's top soccer leagues. We're very excited. When this news dropped, we were like, yes, this is going to just be more soccer for us to talk about on Attacking Third, and there will be a ton because matches will be appearing across Paramount Plus and CBS Sports Network, and there's going to be coverage specifically during the 2022 to 2023 and 2023 to 2024 WSL seasons. So CBS Sports will deliver 57 matches during both of those seasons and exclusively airing some of those matches. So you can only find them on Paramount Plus or CBS Sports, and we are so excited to start incorporating more Women's Super League action on Attacking Third and CBS Sports. Another fun bit of news that we got to go through today is the new name for San Diego NWSL. They will now be operating as San Diego Wave Football Club. They are the 12th NWSL franchise for the league, and they announced their new name. It was very, very exciting. They are going to be the first club in NWSL to utilize the Spanish translation of football in their actual club name. Club President Jill Ellis joined us on Attacking Third to discuss it. It was a delightful interview. You can catch it on youtube.com/attackingthird. So a lot of exciting things with Wave FC entering and now Casey Current in the works. Is there going to be a water bowl? Is there going to be a better name for that? We'll see. But it was a delightful chat, and it was lovely to have Jill Ellis on the show talking all about those things. And once again, people can find it all over the place. You can find it on YouTube if you like video. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you catch your shows. And another bit of breaking news that we have to talk about is
you're just running through all this news, and I love it so much because there is a lot that we need to inform all of our listeners about. So take a deep breath, Sandra. You're doing great.
This is a big one. I'm excited to get to this one. Portland Thorns hire new head coach. So via reporting from Megalyn Hinn at The Athletic, Mark Parsons will be making his exit as announced earlier in 2021 in the season that he will be leaving at the conclusion of the 2021 season to head on off and coach Netherlands women's national team. And according to this new update, Ryan Wilkinson, the former Canadian international, will be replacing Mark Parsons as Thorns head coach. So a little bit of a news dump happening for our listeners today. Some that we wanted to keep you on the form about, some that you might have heard about already. But probably the newest bit of this, Lisa, is this Portland Thorns head coaching announcement. And it comes right on the heels of their announcement of a new general manager with Karina LeBlanc. So that is two former players and two Canadian internationals that are in some pretty big positions for Portland Thorns here.
It was announced by Mark Parsons really, really early on during this season for NWSL, like late in May. So right at the start of this regular season, that he would be departing the club after this regular season. He was going to finish it out and then go coach at the international level for the Netherlands, which was huge. All of the players were really excited for him, all of the fans of Portland, fans of the league, because they know how well Mark Parsons has done with Portland and been able to grow that club and everything that they've done there. And now it's kind of been a bit of a secret throughout the league, and fans have been asking us even who's going to be the new coach. There's been a lot of turnover. Finally, it's announced and it is out there. Thanks to Meg for doing all of the great reporting and investigative journalism to get this and get to the bottom of it, because I've been wanting to know who's going to step into this role, because those are really big shoes to fill, that Mark Parsons has done such a fantastic job with the Thorns, and his trademark and the club's trademark is really finding these young players, bringing them into the system, similar to how MLS does it. They have these youth grassroots programs that bring up these homegrown players. And that's what Portland Thorns is, really one of the only NWSL clubs to actually do that and to have youth programs to grow these players. So Mark Parsons was a really, really big part of that. Now welcoming in Rain Wilkinson, she's a player that has been around the game forever, Canadian international. In January of 21, she took a position as the England, part of the England women's national team coaching staff role. She was part of the Canadian international coaching squad as an assistant coach for a bit. Now coming back to the States and playing or coaching at Portland, that's a really big role, but it's so great to see a female stepping into this coaching position and this coaching role, and a former player as well. And standing alongside Karina LeBlanc, that's like a Canadian powerhouse there in the office chairs between Wilkinson and LeBlanc, for sure, for sure. So a good hire. I'm excited to see what Rain Wilkinson can do with Portland Thorns, but man, big shoes to fill. Shield winners, number one in the standings throughout this regular season. We've seen quick turnover in other coaching positions with NWSL clubs, and they make it work. They do a great job. You look at Laura Harvey, who did a fantastic job with OL Reign coming into the role in the middle of a season. So bright future, hopefully ahead for Portland, but definitely breaking news in the NWSL.
Yeah, according to some of the reporting that essentially the original candidate list had over 10 names on it. And I guess Wilkinson ended up sort of locking up the coaching position. So there are plans to make a more formal announcement, obviously via the club towards the end of the season, because that was, I think, always that was always the plan, right? They said that was always the plan, that Mark Parsons was going to stay on through 2021. And then anything that would be happening regarding that position would take place after his departure. But you're 100% correct. That's huge, huge shoes to fill. Even if you're just looking at this season alone for the Thorns and everything that this team has sort of gone through, because right now this team is the winningest team in 2021. They have literally won, as of right now, every single thing that could have been won this year in front of them. They went into the Challenge Cup and walked away as Challenge Cup champions for 2021. They participated in the women's ICC tournament and lifted the trophy there. And towards the end of the regular season, they secured the NWSL 2021 Shield. And now they are going to be participating in the 2021 semifinals with a chance to compete for the ever coveted NWSL championship title. So huge, huge shoes to fill. But, you know, we will see. Obviously, we heard similarly when we had conversations with Karina LeBlanc that one of the big things that could potentially benefit these type of hires and these roles are the fact they are former players. Mm-hmm. That there is a bit of a learning curve that doesn't have to take place. You don't have to have that sort of getting that transitional period of maybe getting settled in terms of being able to build relationships and connect perhaps with players, because these are candidates that have been there. So we heard Karina LeBlanc talk a lot about that, about being in this sort of GM role and having the experience of a former player and having gone through what perhaps feels like the lowest of lows at times and even the highest of highs at times, and how that could be very, very beneficial. So I wouldn't be surprised if somebody like, you know, Wilkinson maybe echoes something similarly, because this is somebody who had a very long career of her own, both internationally with the Canadian women's national team and at the club level, you know, playing in NWSL during what we know now is some really tough times. That inaugural season of 2013 and stretching over those early years of the past decade were some real adjustment and some real transitional periods. And these are players who were there during that time. So, you know, we'll have more on that and all of this as it continues to develop. But we definitely wanted to include that as part of this segment today ahead of our mailbag segment. But that was all the news, Lisa. So now it's time to answer some questions. Are you ready?
I am so ready. So much news to whip through, but exciting times and exciting things happening in the world of soccer. I'm just happy to be here chatting it with you, Sandra.
Right on. Let's do this. Listeners, we love hearing from you. We love answering questions when you leave them for us. If you are unfamiliar with our mailbag segment, if you have a question, if you have a topic, you got to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and you got to leave your question and your topic, and Lisa and I will answer it as part of our mailbag segment. And we are so delighted to get into this segment because this was such a United States Women's National Team heavy episode with the roster announcement and everything. And we were so grateful that so many of you dropped some United States Women's National Team questions. So let's hop into it. Eraser Grace asks, why is the United States women's national team swimming in midfielders and forwards, but it seems like having trouble with the left back position? Is that a traditional position that players don't develop in? And I think maybe we could take this in two parts, right? Because it was a little bit of a two-part question, Lisa. It's why is the United States women's national team swimming in midfielders and forwards, but having trouble with the left back position? And I might even expand that a little bit to like defensive positions. And I'm just going to say it's because we're Americans. Yeah. I'm going to blame it on the United States. There's just something about, and Lisa, you could probably attest to this as well too, having, you know, growing up and playing soccer and stuff. It's like, for whatever reason, there is just always this emphasis on getting on the ball, getting behind it, and just going to goal. Just so many times you hear a lot of the coaching or lack of direction, and it's just like, you know what, you're going to get out there and you're going to run. And a lot of it is tied to that. And sometimes, quite frankly, it has worked. Even at the highest level, we've seen the senior national team be praised for what? Their athleticism, their physicality on the ball, and their ability to have a relentless engine. Mm-hmm. Because of their fitness, right? Versus other national teams representing different styles tactically across the globe are, you know, referred to and talked about in different ways in terms of their soccer. So for the United States, that's just something that starts, I think, at the youth level, quite frankly. That's a lot of where it starts, right, Lisa?
I agree with that, Sandra. I mean, when you think about the glory and the praise and the spotlight that gets shown on the game of soccer, it's who's ever scoring the goals. No one wants to be the goalkeeper when you're a little kid, but it's who's getting the goals, not even really who's getting the assists. And that starts from a very, very young age in the game of soccer. And then when you look at backs – traditionally, I mean, so I was a back. I was actually a left back in college, a right-footed left back. But I was an outside back for years. I started as a very little kid as a forward. And then I think when I was like 10 or 12, they were like, okay, no, you're going to play defense now. You're not scoring enough goals. We're going to put you in the back, which we actually see that a lot in, especially in American soccer. Even you look at a player like Sofia Huerta, who was an outside forward type player, and then you bring them on the back and they can still have the opportunity to get forward and send crosses in, but it's a bit more of a defensive mindset position. So I would say that it's a little bit hard to develop players in those positions when we're taught and the glory and so much of the praise goes to the goal scorers on a team, because good players, even at a young age, they want the ball and they want to score. I mean, even now I still want to play the ball. When I still play pickup, I try to play attacking center mid, not defense, because I don't want to defend anymore. I want to score all the goals. So I think that is a mindset that comes into it. And I'm going to also argue and say that we're going to see a lot more defenders coming into the U.S. national team mix. I mean, we already talked about it before with Emily Fox slotting into that outside back position. She's a tremendous role there. I mean, we've seen Crystal Dunn, who can do it and can play there, but I personally would like to see her a little higher up the field. Alana Cook is slotting into that back line. We have Casey Kruger. There's a lot of players in the mix that can play in the back, but I think the future for the U.S. women's national team, the formation, it's going to look a little bit different. So we'll circle back to this, maybe come the World Cup, and we'll see how our progression of outside left back specifically is doing at the national level.
Absolutely. Yeah, it just sort of just seems like that's how it kind of falls into it. And it sort of trickles into something like the national team, the senior national team level. And then you sort of said, like the question is phrased, why is the team swimming in midfielders and forwards? And then it sort of becomes this thing where it's like, well, these are some of the best players. And it comes into this scenario of like, how do we get them all on the pitch at the same time? And we saw it sort of happen with this transition of Crystal Dunn as a high attacking octane player, right? And then pushed back into a left back role because there wasn't a lot of competition brewing in those left back positions in terms of what the coaching staff wanted to see at the time. Margaret Burse and her introduction to the national team level, similar vibe, this attacking minded player. They wanted to see how she could do at outside back. And now they're starting to say like, hey, like she's doing a lot of great stuff at forward. We're going to bring her in again, but this time it's forward. So there's a lot of back and forth that goes back with all of this stuff.
You also have to take into account during a 90-minute match, there's only so many substitution windows and only so many substitutes that a team gets per game. Most traditionally, it's the forwards that get rotated first. They're the ones that you want to be the quickest and the fastest and the most fresh on the field. They can provide different looks in your attack. So on a roster, you need to have a little bit more depth at that position, knowing that you're going to rotate those substitutes a little bit more frequently on the pitch. And then it becomes the midfield, and defenders and goalkeepers, very rarely, if ever, do they get rotated out. Maybe it'll be the outside backs if they're running a lot, but I think that also lends into why there's so much more depth at midfield and forward position than in a back position, because you play those players more than you rotate throughout a game than you would the defensive line of a team.
I love to see it. It's something that's been not uncommon for the United States women's national team. I don't know if this is perhaps the signaling, right, of maybe a new transition where maybe we will start to see players develop more specifically in that outside back role position, but we've yet to see it happen because of how this is sort of how it's been for so long. I mean, Lori Kolupny, a legend of the game, a 2015 World Cup champion, earned that at the left back position, but she was primarily a defensive mid for a team like the Chicago Red Stars. So it's just something that has really, I think when you're almost thinking of like the culture of the United States women's national team, that's sort of been ingrained in that. But maybe, perhaps, we are witnessing a new and different era, and I hope that we are. Let's move on to this next one. This is from Beth_Nick_NIK. I've learned a lot about the game, and it's been super entertaining. I love the player interviews. Sandra and Lisa are a treat. Question: which players do you think are going to California next year? Several teams have more allocated players than they can protect. I'm curious if you have any predictions. Lisa, I can't wait to hear what you got to say on this one. Who do you think is in California?
I love this. I love the predictions. If you don't know how the draft works, we talked about it in last week's mailbag segment. Go find it. It's in our podcast feed and it's on YouTube, all about how the draft works, allocated players, protecting players, discovery players, all of that. This is such a fun question. I think it's a really tricky question for us to answer at this point in time, still with the regular season happening, knowing that there are new coaches happening between LA and San Diego, the Wave and Angel City, as we like to call them now that San Diego has a name, Wave FC. It's hard to know what kind of style and personnel and player and foundation that those teams want to have for what types of players will go there. We already know Kristen Press is at Angel City. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a player like Alex Morgan head over to LA, even San Diego, try to get in that California mix of players. But it's tricky to know who's going to go based on not only what players teams protect in the draft, but also what type of player you're looking to get, because there are a lot of different styles of players out there. If you're going to look to go really direct a lot, you're going to want to look for a lot of fast forwards that can get in behind. But if you're going to want to hold up play, and maybe you're looking for more of a nine that plays similar to Lee, to the way that Carly Lloyd plays with her back to goal, Sydney LaRue receiving the ball at her feet, dropping it back into the midfield, it all comes down to how these teams want to define their playing style. But that's kind of where I am with this. Sandra, do you have any predictions? Anyone you think will head over to California?
Absolutely not. Listen, this is the first time there's going to be two teams entering the league at once. The rules for the expansion draft have already been altered a little bit. They're different compared to years past. And I'm just as excited and eager to sort of see how things will unfold. I'm sure maybe we might have a better outlook on what coaches could be looking for. We have some things in the works on hopefully getting some of California's new coaches on the podcast and talking about that a little bit. And when you sort of have a better understanding of what perhaps the coaches and the general managers are trying to build with these new franchises, then maybe you have a different outlook of who or what they're looking for and bringing in there. But there's only going to be nine selections, right? Yeah. In terms of what these two teams and who they can bring on. So there are 10 teams in the league, but there was a move that was made between Angel City and Louisville. So Angel City will only be selecting from nine clubs because Louisville will not be, they have roster protection. And then in San Diego, I'm sure as the expansion draft comes closer, they will also be listening to offers and opportunities. So it's really like what can happen. But, you know, we saw a California kid and Kristen Press already go to Angel City. So I'm looking for any Cali connections there. You know, maybe people might think, why do you want to bring a 30 plus year old forward and like build your team around that, but you realize it's Kristen Press. And then maybe that could, the same argument could echo for somebody like an Alex Morgan, who knows, you know, they have the opportunity. So it just is, it's going to be interesting to see teams with allocated players, who they protect or who they leave off. Right. And what those expansion teams actually want to take. So, let's close it out with maybe this final question. It's a World Cup question. World Cup 2023. It's coming from LF Alexander asking, my questions in regard to the World Cup 2023. Who from the Olympic roster would you give a spot to in 2023? Name your top three defenders, midfielders, and forwards that did not attend the Olympics that you would like to have on your World Cup team. Man, you know what? I think from the Olympic roster to the World Cup, I would like to see Casey Krueger continue her journey with this team in a World Cup. I guess I would consider her a top three defender, but you know, they want me to name somebody who didn't go to the Olympics.
I was going to say she went to the Olympics, and Alexander here is looking for someone that didn't go to the Olympics. I think Emily Fox should be one of the defenders that's in that list. It's tricky.
I'd like her to get some more time for sure. You know, to see there, I would like to see Sophia Huerta get some more time.
Yeah.
You know, just to sort of, we have to see like what Vlad Godinovsky is going to roll out with there. In terms of midfielders, I think we can both agree that Andy Sullivan is is a top player that we want to see in that midfield mix moving forward and slash permanently, right? She's been doing a lot of great stuff with Washington Spirit. And we've been talking about her too all this season, but you know, somebody like a Morgan Cattrall, you know, get her in there even for competition, right? Just to sort of see what that midfielder, what that midfield core can do with a player like her returning to the mix. And forwards, I mean, I'm just going to end it with what I started with. I'm so happy to see Margaret Purse as a forward.
Yeah.
In this next camp. And I want to see her part of that forward core.
I think it's also important to touch on Sophia Smith, player that's done a lot, Mallory Pugh, but yeah, Margaret Purse, seeing her continue to go forward in that sense is really, really bright. It's such a bright future. I'll double down on Andy Sullivan in the midfield too, though. She needs to be part of that mix, especially if you have an injury to a player like Julie Ertz, or she just can't go 90 minutes anymore because she is dealing with a bit of an injury. You need someone like Andy Sullivan who can seamlessly transition into that defensive six role and pick up any slack that's in there. I like this question, though. I love that we're looking forward to the future of the national team throughout the entirety of this episode.
I love it. Let's look ahead. Playoff plug for everyone. They continue with the semifinals on Sunday. OL Reign versus Washington Spirit. Number two versus number three. Portland Thorns FC hosting Chicago Red Stars. Number one taking on the number four seed. You can catch all of these games on CBS Sports Network, followed by the championship final, which will be on November 20th at Lynn Family Stadium in Louisville, Kentucky at 12 noon Eastern time, which will air on CBS. Get your tickets at nwslsoccer.com/championship. We want to thank everybody for listening. As always, thank you for your questions. Follow us on Twitter at Attacking Third. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and wherever you listen to your shows. Leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts with a question and we'll answer it during our mailbag segment. We're also available as video. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Visit youtube.com/attackingthird. And we will be back with more semifinal interviews. We've got so much in the works for you. We will be back with a semifinal preview. Everybody stay tuned to Shane Rivera and Mr. Roman. This was Attacking Third.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount+.
Yes!